Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Thursday, April the 5th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And Wendy, I have to tell you, I was so buried in what I was doing today, I almost didn't notice what time it was. And then fortunately, I looked up and said, oh, 5 minutes to go. Hurry, hurry.
You know, but I got to say, and maybe you'll agree, it's a fun feeling to be that involved in something and be that immersed.
It is. I love it. Well, especially since the thing I was immersed in was putting the book together.
Cool.
Basically laying in the pages and so forth on like a preliminary basis to see how they all fall in and so forth. And I have to say, based on what I'm seeing so far, this is going to be about a 300-page book. So it's going to be a good-sized book.
But, well, I think you were hoping for 250 to 350.
So we're right in the range.
Right on the range. Yeah. Very good.
So that's working out very nicely. I have to say, though, it is very absorbing to put the pages together, not because it's such a fun task, but because it's becoming real. It's becoming real right in front of my eyes. And I'd forgotten what that was like.
Another very cool thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a very cool thing. I remember going through that when I self-published a novel many years ago. And just putting it into page form so that it looked like pages and so forth. Wow, it's quite a feeling. It looks completely different from when you're just drafting it, you know? So, yeah, it's fun. It's good. So, how are you doing? Anything fun happening at your end?
Well, I was just going to comment on your book thing.
Oh.
Just listening to the things you're doing, putting the book together, is making me anticipate my own desire to write a book so I can do that.
Ah.
That's fun.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Good. You know, because, actually you mentioned something, didn't you, about don't mind to write a book?
Well, I did. And, you know, it's kind of, maybe this is an update on Project B, which is Project Body. Years ago, I mean, probably 20 years ago, when I was still struggling with being overweight, I kept thinking about how is this going to change? And when it does change, how will it affect my life? And I kept feeling I'm going to have such an incredible story to tell.
Mm.
And not only will it be a story, but it'll be something that will inspire others. Because I knew that how I was going to learn to shift the whole weight issue was going to like not only revolutionize my life, but I just had a feeling it could revolutionize others as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's taken a very long time to get traction in this area of my life. But I'd say since I've been studying law of attraction for the last 10 years, I'd say that's when I started to really recognize traction. My beliefs were changing about myself, my body, my self-image, what weight meant, you know, all these many things.
Mm.
But, you know, as I've been saying, ever since I got the affirmation, which I know was a beautiful gift that I received from the universe or from my inner being, which was happy body, happy life.
Right.
And that completely took my focus off of food and exercise and all that kind of stuff. But what has been fascinating is the next thing that, you know, it had come to me was I can eat anything I want. So long as it's what I want and my body is wanting it. So it's not just me, Wendy, the physical self wants it, but me, Wendy, the body and the spiritual being wanted, because I know that it'll nurture me. That has started to change my life, where everything feels different about food, because I'm eating food that I always thought was off limits. And I'm so enjoying it, and I'm seeing the scale move downward. I'm like, this is so cool. And so I'm starting to kind of sense, I see a book in this.
Yeah.
I'm going to want to tell this tale, because this is an exciting tale. And yesterday, after the show, I was talking with you, you know, kind of like the working title is Happy Diet.
And I love
it's
that.
It's the happy diet.
Yeah.
It's all about being happy, because it's all about me being in alignment to my inner being. And so that in itself is really quite exquisite in how it feels inside of me, because I had one of my favorite pasta dishes last night for dinner, which I have to say I felt such guilt when I would eat it in the past. Because, you know, pasta was not a good thing.
Oh, no,
and
no.
Cheese
no.
was not a good thing. There was nothing in it that supposedly was good for me. And so last night, I totally enjoyed it. And I stepped on the scale today. I went, Well, look at that. It stayed at that same low number. It didn't even budge up. So all those gurus who told me I should never eat pasta, for shame on them. They're wrong.
What was it I saw?
They're following some science or some idea that may or may not be accurate, but it's not being accurate for me. That much I know.
I can't remember where it was I saw it. I think it may have been like something that I saw on a webpage or something. But there was some guy who was promoting the idea that the worst thing you can eat is tomatoes. And I'm thinking,
oh, yeah.
Really? Well, then I'm about ready to keel over dead because I eat them all the time.
I do. I probably eat something with tomato in it every day. That used to be on the list of don't eat tomatoes, and I can't even remember all the reasons why. I think because they're too high on the glycemic index. I don't know. But I'm like, I can't imagine living life without tomatoes.
Well, me neither, actually.
They're in everything.
I mean, not only do I enjoy them.
They're in my salsa. They're in my soup. They're in my pasta. You know, or my pasta sauce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this takes me back to, I see a book coming, and it's exciting to think about because I've been desiring to write this book for at least 2 decades. But I didn't know I didn't have anything to put in the book. I just knew one day my life would unfold in a way that there would be a book available to me because the experiences would have lined up. And now I'm in the point where my experience is starting to line up, and it's really quite exciting. So
and
I love
the working title too. The Happy Diet. I love
that. The Happy
Diet. I mean, from a marketing perspective, I love that title. That's a pick me up and buy me title. That's a really good one. It is. That's a very good title.
For me, it's really it's the merging of everything that's meaningful to me. It's learning how to connect with your inner being. It's learning the principles of law of attraction. It's staying focused on caring about your own personal life and becoming your own individual and not being enmeshed with other people's ideas and thoughts, but having your own. And then, of course, it's about, you know, how you can change your body and what it looks like based on changing your thoughts and your beliefs, all by being aligned to your inner being. So I think there's a lot of stuff in here. Everything that I stand for, I think I can write in this book.
Yeah, I would say so. I love the fact, too, that there is no counting in that outline. There's no counting of calories. There's no counting of ingredients. There's no portions. There isn't even any reference to food yet at all. I'm sure it's going to be in there somewhere, but it's not even mentioned yet.
And I doubt it. Because, you know, even – this is so funny because as I've been getting this new awareness about – just be aligned and be happy. Because like I say, last night, what made my meal so delectable to me was that there was no guilt associated with it. I just truly appreciated the flavors, appreciated the fact that I'm a woman who lives in choice, that I can choose what I want, and I don't have to live up to anybody's expectations or rules or what science thinks they know. Because what science knows one day, they change their mind the next. And I certainly don't have anything negative about science or the scientists who learn the things that they do, because I think it's very valuable. However, it's not absolute. Because I don't know if there will ever be a point that science will be able to determine that they can absolutely measure everything. There's still going to be some deal of this is the best conclusion that they can make based on the data that they have now and based on their instrument measurements now.
Right.
But yeah,
that will always be the case. At least,
yeah,
I should qualify that. It will always be a case among honest scientists. There are some scientists who have agendas. And that is funny, but I'm not meaning it to be funny. I mean, there are scientists who have agendas and they'll push their agendas with their science. And
I
have to say I look a little bit down my nose at those people because I don't appreciate them doing that. But nevertheless, you're right. The honest scientist, the one who truly is honest that, you know, I am here to learn, I'm not the final authority, that scientist is going to say, you know, this is the best information we have to this point. And that's always going to be the message. So you're right.
Well, one of my favorite gurus when it comes to information about food and how it interacts with our body, did a blog the other day. And this one, she was reading a book from 1965. Now, why she didn't say, hey, guys, this could be outdated, I don't know. But she got really excited about some information in a book from 1965. He was a leading research scientist in 1965. Mm-hmm. Hello, can I say that number enough times? There's a lot of things have changed, right?
Just a few.
But that's where she was coming up with the information that the simpler your food is, the more that there was science to show that people could lose weight. So in other words, if you had a gourmet recipe that had like 90,000 million components to it, that one could cause you to gain weight versus if you just had, and I'm going to just for a point of illustration, green beans steamed versus green beans cooked in oil or butter or with seasoning. So I'm like, okay, so she's not saying go with flavorless food, because honestly, I can eat a strawberry all by itself and I think that's the perfect flavor, the perfect food. But she's also saying, you know, keep your food as simple as possible and you'll have a better chance of losing weight. And I'm like, okay, that's nice to hear. Big deal. And then, of course, I heard from my other favorite guru who said, okay, potatoes are no longer on the bad list. Go ahead and eat potatoes. There's a whole bunch of reasons to eat potatoes. And I'm like, and you know, because I've come to this awareness, I think I've been coming to it over time, but now it's like my inner being said it, I resonated with it, and I feel like I have all this evidence that I've now lived through my experience to go, you know what? Everybody wants to sell their program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even saying they're bad and they're just marketing it for money, but it's like many people have come up with ideas that they feel very strongly in, just like I feel very strongly with mine and the way I live my life. And they're wanting to share it with other people because they feel deep down inside this did so much for them, they want to share it with others. Again, I feel like that comes from an honest place. However, the one thing that I missed along the way, and I think others do too, is that I was looking for guidance outside of myself. I was looking for others to tell me what I needed to do instead of looking for the answers inside of myself, because my inner being is me. It's the part of me that remains non-physical. If there's anybody that has a vested interest in my life, it would be.
This is true.
My inner being knows what works for me. And my inner being understands my metabolism. My inner being understands my personality. Because we all know everyone has a different body metabolism. Everybody has a different personality. So different things are going to work for different people. And I wasn't consulting my inner being. I was looking outside of myself for the answers. And no wonder I was being swept away to and fro as the winds blowed in different directions because different scientists were, you know, coming up with different pieces of information and whatnot. And so I'm done with all that. I mean, I'm truly done with that. And it doesn't mean I'm not curious to know some of the insights that they think they're coming up with, but I don't really care anymore what they decide with their science is the conclusion that they've come to. Right now, I'm only going to be concerned with what does my inner being tell me is for my highest and best good. Everything else doesn't matter.
Well, that's a very reaffirming, I should say, kind of viewpoint, because I have to say I was a little bit worried when I heard about that first person you talked about, the one who cited the 1965 book and said that
right.
You want your foods to be really simple. I was just thinking to myself, so does that mean that my trail mix has to be unrefined raw sugar? It's only one ingredient.
I don't know. Maybe it means you can only eat, wait, I was going to say peanuts, but you can't because my second guru says don't eat peanuts. So maybe you can only eat one item in the trail mix at a time. So you pick out all the pecans and you can eat them at one time. And then you pull out all the like pumpkin seeds. You can eat them. I don't know what it means. It just seemed like all I knew was for me, I went, oh, my God, I can't hear another rule. I cannot hear another rule.
That much I do understand. I mean, last night, Louise and I were out to dinner, and we both had these delicious short ribs at a restaurant we love to go to nearby. And as I'm eating the short ribs, and there's this great demi-glaze on it, and I normally just eat them, and I'm just enjoying them. Last night, I remembered our conversation. And so for a brief moment, I stopped and said, you know, if I had lived the way Wendy described herself living, I would be feeling guilty with every single forkful. And could I imagine that? And my mind instantly said, nah, go back to eating. And I started to eat again. I just didn't want to go there.
Did. And you know what's funny? The moment you said you had pork ribs, do you know what the autopilot thought was for me?
Oh, what's that?
Oh, those are too fatty.
Yeah, right.
I swear to God, it just shot off because it's part of the rules. But then because I'm wanting to live the non-rules, I just said, not anymore. I no longer support that idea. That is not true for me. Nope, not at all. And then when you said demi-glaze, my next thing was, oh, sugar, insulin, bad. And I went, nope. I don't believe that anymore. That rule's not for me.
Yes, there was the alternative side of me.
I'm sorry I almost ruined your dinner. And I'm really pleased that you followed your own guidance, which was, oh, no, I'm going to go back to eating.
No, there was no way you were going to ruin the dinner at all. And in fact, regarding the demi-glaze, there was probably an alternate version of me in some alternate universe that was freaking out and having a diabetic attack, but I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's funny. Anyway, we started this because we were talking about your win and about the book, and then I went on to how I want to write a book and then what the book is about, and then that took us into the update on Project Body. Don't you love how things just roll one thing to another? I think that's law of attraction, just like synchronizing our conversation and having everything have a thread.
Well, since this is a law of attraction show, I guess I have to agree with that because otherwise they'd be arresting me and carting me away. So.
Okay, well, so where do we want to go from here, Walt?
Take a breath, relax. Everything's okay. The diabetic police are not here to cart us away. We're all right. Everything's fine. No, actually, we are on a new subsection of Part 3, The Science of Deliberate Creation, which is from the book The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teachings of Abraham. And this subsection is basically a summary of everything that we have talked about so far in this new section. It's called, not surprisingly, A Summary of the Deliberate Creation Process.
So, cool.
Shall we begin?
We shall.
Okay. I think we're in a silly mood today. You know that?
And that's a good thing.
It is.
I don't know about anyone else, but does anyone else like silliness? Because it does make us laugh and feel good and lighthearted. That's a good thing.
Okay, let's take a radio poll. Everybody who loves silliness, raise your hand. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Oh, yeah, wait, it's
a majority.
Back.
Oh, I 8, forgot
9,
that.
10, 11, 12.
Well, then it's almost unanimous then. Yes.
There you go.
So, anyway, if I can calm down long enough, I will actually try to read this.
I'm glad you're reading. I don't think I can calm down.
So it says, now let us summarize all that we have offered here so that you may have a clear and definite plan for the deliberate control of your life experience. First, recognize that you are more than you see here in this physical body and that there is a broader, wiser, certainly older part of you that remembers all that you have lived and, more important, knows that which you now are. And from that all-encompassing perspective, this part of you can offer you clear and absolute information as to the appropriateness of that which you are doing, speaking, or thinking, or of that which you are about to do or about to speak. And I can absolutely confirm that's true because while we were talking silly, my inside was laughing. So I know it's absolutely true.
It says, from your all-encompassing perspective, this part of you can offer clear and absolute information.
Yeah.
Absolute.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about. Absolute. It means it's It is. I mean, it's like it is your highest and best good. It's the absolute best, absolute information. And that comes from the part of us that is not in physical form. It's the part of me that it is still non-physical. I love that. I love getting absolute information.
This is true. I like that too. I'm still getting used to it also. I mean, for the longest time, I believed I could not trust anything that I was hearing inside me because that would mean I was crazy listening to voices or something like that. And that I always get mixed information, so I can't trust it. You know, so I have to look outside and be objective and all that kind of stuff. So to know now that actually the information I'm getting is all good is quite relaxing and it's empowering at the same time. I think part of the reason that I came to the conclusion that I couldn't trust it is because on some level I didn't really trust myself when it really comes down to it. I mean, I certainly didn't think about it that way. I didn't say, well, I just don't trust you. But nevertheless, on some level, I just didn't quite trust what was coming up. I trusted the people outside. You know, I trusted the big people. I trusted the parents and the adults mm-hmm. and the teachers and everybody else because they all knew better than I did. Apparently not.
You know, I find that, you know, trust is something that it doesn't just happen. It's like, at least for me, trust is not an airy-fairy, you know, faith kind of thing where you just believe in something that there's no evidence for. That has never worked for me. But what does work for me, and I've heard Abraham say this as well, is, you know, people are who have a hard time trusting the information they get from the inner being do so because they're unfamiliar with the information coming from their inner being, and they haven't tested it to see how it works for them. Like, they don't have a knowing what it feels like when they get that information or what it sounds like or, you know, however they interpret it. And so it's really important to test it for yourself. So let's say, okay, I'll use me an example. You know, let's say I get a sense, go ahead and eat, you know, a fast food hamburger meal for dinner. And I'll go, really? That's what I could eat? And I get a yes. Well, if I eat that meal and it feels really satisfying, like it tastes really good. And when, you know, I'm done eating, I feel pleasantly full. I don't feel like I have cravings that I have to eat like something else and then eat like too much that I feel full. And then the next morning, especially for me, because I love the bathroom scale, when I step on the scale and I didn't gain weight, all of those signs say, well, when I ask, really, I can have a fast food hamburger meal? And I got a yes. Well, all of the results seem to line up with what a yes would be. And so you do it more and more. And I've done it many, many times. Now, there have been times that, let's just say I'll use the same example, eating a hamburger meal from a fast food restaurant. And when I'm done, I might feel like my stomach is gurgling. I might feel like I'm running to the bathroom every 20 minutes. I may wake up and see 2 extra pounds on the scale. Well, that to me would be, I don't think I heard heard the right message. So I'm going to have to test that again.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have to ask, were there other variables going on that would alter the circumstances? Now, what I know for me is that if all of a sudden, like, let's say I get a yes, go ahead and get a really nice fast food hamburger meal. And then a phone call comes in and it gets me really upset. And now I can't think of anything else about except for what this person said to me and how it went down and what's about to transpire. And oh my gosh, and now I'm in a state of panic. Now if I eat that hamburger meal, I'm no longer aligned. I'm no longer feeling happy. I'm really stressed because of the phone call. And so that's something where I've learned, just because I got a yes, go ahead and order yourself a fast food hamburger meal. Well, at that point in time, if let's say that was at 6 o'clock and I was aligned to my inner being and I was in a happy place, yes, if I ate it right then and there, it would all go down well. But you know what? If at 6:30, that's when the phone call came in that got me all crazy in my energy, and I ate at 7 o'clock and I still hadn't adjusted my vibration back to happy, then that meal could cause some digestive distress because I was experiencing digestive distress with that phone call. I wasn't digesting or ingesting or handling that phone call very well.
Does that make sense? Yeah, well, that does. Yeah, it almost actually has very little to do with the food. It has to do with the phone call more than anything else.
Well, and it has to do with the vibration of what I'm now emanating while I'm eating.
Right.
So if while I'm eating, I'm in a great place and I'm feeling wonderful, then chances are that is going to nourish me and I'm going to feel good about what I ate. But if I introduce some vibrational component that is negative and contrary to feeling good and it gets me out of my alignment, then when I eat, the cells of my body are feeling the stress that I'm experiencing because of the phone call, but now my body's trying to digest food while simultaneously being in duress. And now it digests differently.
You know, while you're talking about fast food there, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I usually don't like to eat fast food. In fact, I'd be really hard-pressed to remember the last time I had a fast food hamburger. Not because I think it's bad for me, although it probably is, just because I'm not so sure it's real food. But putting that aside for a moment, I just don't like it. I just don't like the flavor of it. It just tastes wrong. And I've kind of kicked it out of my life because I really don't want to have it there. So the question that comes to my mind is, well, was that me following inner guidance or was I just listening to my taste buds?
Good question.
And I don't know what the answer is. I know that I don't want to go anywhere near it, but other than that.
Well, you know, yesterday I was chatting with you about, you know, we were talking about the food stuff after the show. And there are certain things, and I know you love the word preference, and this comes in perfect harmony with that, mm-hmm. because I prefer never to eat sugar in the morning because my body does not react well when I do. I will be on a sugar high all day. It will cause me to crave all sorts of foods. And that's when I was eating on autopilot, I would just grab all sorts of things that my body didn't really want. And I would just graze all day long. And by the end of the day, I would feel miserable.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So that was something that I learned probably 20 years ago. Do not do sugar in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love to start the day with a big glass of orange juice. And I think when I was much younger, somehow that didn't seem to bother me, or I wasn't paying attention to the symptoms. I don't know which.
Mm-hmm.
But then there came a point I just started to notice that I was so uncomfortable having cravings all day long and then ending up feeling miserable. And I started to pay attention to what I was eating and what I was doing. And I noticed a common thread was having juice in the morning. So, well, let's just change that and see what happens.
Good plan.
When I got rid of juice in the morning, I felt better. I'm not saying juice is bad. I'm not saying oranges are bad. I'm not saying sugar is bad. I'm just saying for me personally, that did not work for me. So I determined not that that's a rule, but because my preference is to feel good, it's easy for me to not choose sugary stuff in the morning because I want to feel better. Now, back to your question, did my inner being give me that guidance or did I decide it?
I don't know. I have no way of deciding that. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. And so, I mean, sometimes there's just maybe common sense. So for me, it doesn't really matter to me whether my body was like saying, don't do sugar in the morning, or whether I was going, I probably need to conclude this based on my scientific, you know, testing. Don't do it. Or maybe my inner being was pushing me in that direction or trying to send me those signals. It doesn't matter. And it, to me, as to what the source was, I just know what feels good for me. So I'm going to follow that.
Well, I tell you, I do like what you have to say about testing to see, are you in alignment? And then once you're in that feel-good place, asking yourself how you feel about whether or not you really want something. Is it really something that you want or just something that you're eating to, you know, fill some sort of dysfunctional need instead? Mm-hmm. And I never really thought about it consciously before we started talking about it yesterday, but I was realizing I think I've done that all along. I mean, I have what is typically known as a high metabolism, so I've never really had a weight issue. I mean, it wasn't until I reached 60 that I even got anything remotely close to a bulge in the belly. So it was never a big problem for me. And I think I always did that just because, I mean, food was never an issue for me. It's just, do I want that? Not really. I don't want to do that. I don't want to eat that way. It just doesn't feel good to me. So I think I was kind of doing what you described as your ideal way of eating by default.
Well, you know, for a long time, when I would meet somebody who was very thin, I don't mean like excruciatingly thin, but just not overweight, if I knew them well enough that I felt I could ask them some personal questions, first thing was I wanted to find out, had they always been thin?
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to specifically talk to people who had always been thin, like this is their natural state of being. And what I wanted to do is, and I would ask them, can you tell me what you think about when you think about food? Or can you tell me how you make a decision as to what to eat or what not to eat? And I find it really interesting. It's not like I've done scientific study with like 500 people.
Right.
But in my very informal, you know, testing, every single person without question said, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think about it.
Exactly.
And so I started to put together kind of an understanding of that's the point. They don't think about it, mm-hmm. not consciously.
Right.
And maybe like for you, you're kind of like going back like, well, I think I do ask myself, do I want that? Do I not want that? But you're not like laboring over mealtime.
No, we're talking about something. We're talking about something that takes me like 3 seconds and I'm done.
And how conscious are you that you're doing it?
Not terribly.
No, it just kind of, and that's kind of what I found with almost every person I asked. They would all go, I don't really think about food. And of course, I'm thinking, oh my God, how can you not think about food? It's what I've been thinking about for 50 plus years. How do you do that? But you know what's so funny? And I knew this was happening because I understand law of attraction. Every time I would go, how do you do that? I want to know how to do that. That was me asking the universe.
Oh,
teach
yeah.
Teach me how to do that. I want food to be such a non-issue where I don't focus on it. I just simply gravitate towards that which will nourish me because I'm in alignment and I'm in a happy place. And so it's going to go down well. That's what I truly desire. I don't want to, it's like, I knew I didn't want the resistance of you can't have that and you can't have that and you must eat this and this quantity. It's like, I knew I didn't want the food rules. That was kind of an easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really wanted was the freedom that comes from not having that be an obsession, not having that be in the forefront of my mind all the time.
And from my perspective, it's the opposite. From my perspective, it's hearing that food was always in the forefront of your mind. I mean, theoretically, I can understand that, but experientially, I have no way to relate to that at all.
And I hope you never do.
I hope so.
I hope my conversations don't make you start thinking on it in a warped way. I hope you stay true to who you are. I will tell you this. I want to say I was probably in my early 30s. And, you know, I just found like every year of my life, I seemed to gain 10 pounds. Now, thank God there was a point that stopped.
Right,
otherwise,
sure.
I would be over 500 pounds today.
And you'd be
so
on
thank
TV.
Thank God that didn't keep going.
Right.
But when I was younger, I mean, when I was like 14, I was 140 pounds. When I was 15, I was 150 pounds. And it kept going, you know, for a long time.
Mm.
So anyway, there came a point that once I got to what I considered a weight that was just too unbearable, then I started doing all the stupid yo-yo diets. And after I did all of them, I mean, and the yo-yo diet for me means you lose weight, you gain it all back, plus more. Then you lose all that weight, you get, well, most of it except for 5 pounds. You lose it, you gain it all back, plus more. Then you go on another diet and you lose most of the new weight gain, but you still keep on some of the old stuff. So it's like the scale keeps going up no matter what.
Yeah.
And there just came a point that I was so aware of how focused and obsessed I was about food. Now, putting this in a law of attraction context, my point of attraction was food. I thought about food 24/7.
Mm.
And I was obsessed with what was the right food, what was the wrong food, what's the correct dieting food, what's the right quantity. I was obsessed with it. So it, of course, law of attraction went, wow, this is a really passionate interest for her.
Right.
We'll give her more information.
Of course, yeah. We'll just keep throwing it. Sure.
And a lot of the information was contradictory because I wasn't asking for clarity. I was just getting, I just wanted to know. And so there did come a point that I recognized I was mentally obsessed. Now, I didn't know about law of attraction, but it sure fits into it because I recognized my point of attraction was constantly on the issue of food. And I thought, if the very thing I desire most is to not have this in my brain anymore, I wanted to be free from this obsession. I said to myself, I have decided I'm not going to diet anymore. And of course, I felt, based on everything I had learned, that the consequence would be I'd gain weight. And at that point, I went, you know what? I would rather be fatter and free in my mind than be a prisoner of my own mind. I can't tolerate that. The prison in my mind was something that had become unbearable.
Mm.
So over the next, 2 years, I did gain 50 pounds. But you know what? My brain got free. Kind of like, you know, when you talk about doing your mirror work,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you're recognizing that all that negative self-talk is starting to dim,
yep.
to the point that sometimes you don't hear it at all.
Right.
Well, that's what was happening to me. And it was worth the 50 pounds just to have those internal thoughts shut up. And it was fascinating because I'd be, quote, around the water cooler at work talking to the other ladies, and every woman was talking about what they're going to fix for dinner and how it was sugar-free, gluten-free, fat-free, free. And I'm like, and you think you're going to enjoy that? But honestly, I didn't even partake in the conversation. I just stayed on the periphery, didn't add anything to the conversation.
Well, because the conversation was like the food. It was flavor-free. I mean, come on. That was a boring conversation. I'm sorry. But it is.
Well, it what it did is it was showing me the obsession that it wasn't just me. We have like a social obsession. And this was me going, oh, I'm pulling out of the obsession because my brain's not thinking that anymore. And that felt really delightful for a really, really long time. Now, of course, I didn't like how I felt in my clothes and I didn't like some of the other things, but I'd been experiencing that for years anyway. So that was kind of like the devil I did know.
Mm-hmm.
That was the discomfort that it was discomfort, but it wasn't horrendous because I'd been dealing with it for so long. But then obviously there came a point that I'm like, you know what? I understand how law of attraction works, and there's no reason on this planet that I should be straddled with these circumstances or conditions when I want something different.
True.
So I'm going to be deliberate about using what I know about law of attraction to bring me into great health and great stability on with weight and have a body that, you know, makes me feel good, that has a vitality that I can move around and be energetic. And it's like, yeah, that's what feels good to me.
Yeah.
But the route that I went was thinking, okay, I have to figure out what to eat.
Well, isn't that the way it always is? Whenever we're first faced with the idea of attempting to apply the law of attraction, we think about the law of attraction for a moment. We might even do an affirmation, and then we have to become a doer and go physically do something.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And so I probably wandered around for about the last year trying to figure out what the right foods were and what the right exercise and movement was. And then I get obsessed on it for about a week and then go, Wendy, it's not about the food. It's not about the food. But you know, well, because I had been so well conditioned.
Sure.
And I had practiced and I had such great autopilot stuff. I just automatically went back to the food.
Yeah.
Not the eating of it, but I mean the thinking.
The theory.
That it had
right.
to be food. And it's like, how is it possible that there's not some magic food thing that you're supposed to eat? And I mean, I tested and untested and I just kept saying over and over, it's not about the food. It's not about the food. It's not about the food. But you know, Abraham says words don't teach. Only life experience does. So I had to have many life experiences of this new concept. It's not about the food. For me to really own that. And now I've said it and believed it, and I have enough experience that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's not about the food. Because I can eat a huge, heavy meal and the scale will not budge. I can also eat a huge, heavy meal and the scale causes me to gain 3 pounds. And then the next day it's all gone plus one. And I have watched these bizarre up and down and up and down of the scale and how I feel and all sorts of things with food to realize it's not about the food. Now, food does affect us, but what I'm looking for, it's not about the food. In other words, that's not where my focus is intended to be. Because when I put my focus back on food, I go back into obsessive craziness. And when you focus on a lot of food, you end up eating a lot of food.
Yeah, sure.
So it's fun to me how it always comes back to look for the guidance from your inner being. Everything I've ever needed to know, my inner being can teach me, can guide me, can encourage me, can inspire me. My inner being knows it all. And why not? My inner being is me. My inner being is also infinite intelligence. That's a part of me that I don't have in this physical world.
Very true.
That's a cool source.
It is. Oh, it's very, very, very cool. It reminds me a bit of one of the lines that Michael Beckwith uttered in the movie The Secret. And it was the same kind of phrasing as what you were using there. And I don't remember exactly how he framed the sentence. Somewhere along the line of what you said, and then he finished it by saying, "If you let it." And I knew he was talking about that inner being part. You have to let the inner being part do its part and pay attention to it. If you let it.
You know, I was watching a Super Soul Sunday with Oprah a while back, and her guest was Jeanine Roth, and Jeanine is with a G. And I've known Jeanine Roth for years because she used to talk about women and food. And she wrote a book a number of years ago. I didn't even remember if I still had it, and yep, I found it just recently on my bookshelf. But I think it was called Women, Food, and God. And when I was watching her on this Super Soul Sunday, the thing that stuck out to me as her prevailing message was that everything that we as women who, you know, like obsessed with food, every bit of that is somehow connected to our spirituality. It somehow has a message for who we are in relationship to our inner being. But if we've never looked at it that way, we're missing also some of the messaging. And it reminded me very much of how, you know, law of attraction is about what we vibrate based on what we're feeling on a given subject. That's what we draw into our life. And those feelings are the message of how close or how far away we are from being aligned to what our inner being thinks on that subject. And so she was just kind of using the food as the metaphor that, you know, how you think about food and how you feel about it and whether you feel guilty with food or whether you feel ravenously enjoyable with food or whatever it is with food, that in some way has a metaphoric reflection on our relationship between ourselves and our God. Or, you know, some people consider God outside of themselves. I consider God inside of me. You know, my God is my inner being.
Yeah, me too.
My God is connected to all of inner beings. So when you look at all of our inner beings together as a collective whole, you know, that's the culmination of source energy because we are all connected. So anyway, I think it's a cool idea that in a sense, I have been, according to, you know, Women, Food, and God, the title of the book, I've been dealing with spirituality issues all my life.
True.
And what I've really been desiring is to reconcile myself with myself.
Which makes a lot of sense. I mean, not just from the point of view of someone who practices law of attraction, but I mean, is there any spiritual discipline that doesn't start in some way with how you feel about yourself? I don't think there are any. They may have different ideas about how you should feel about yourself, but they all pretty much start there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we were looking at the book, we finished one paragraph. We should probably finish the other three paragraphs.
The fact that we did one paragraph in 45 minutes.
This is true. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's par for the course, really. But where I was going to with it, this is like a summary of everything that they talked about so far in the book, or in this section of the book, rather. And as you were kind of laying out there the whole spiritual thing, I had a lot of thoughts going through my mind, but one thought that went through my mind was, this is all about how we understand the relationship between spirit and physical matter. And once I came to the understanding, partly through study of LOA, partly through limited study of quantum physics, as I came to realize that what I used to rely on, my belief in being objective, in maintaining a cold, unemotional response to things in order to understand them better, and in order to, you know, basically do things the way that the real world does things, as I stayed in that realm, I found that the answers failed to come more and more and more often the more questions that I asked. And it wasn't until I learned about LOA and about some of the teachings of various spiritual modalities and even about quantum mechanics that I began to understand everything that we need to understand, we have to understand first through the spirit. If we don't do that, we're cutting ourselves off. And that lines up perfectly with being in alignment. Because the only way you can really get the messaging, I've learned that from you actually, is if we're in alignment. If we're in alignment, then the messages come through. If we're out of alignment, then the messages don't come through. In fact, you even made a reference in there. It made me think of a childhood game. Remember the childhood game, Hot and Cold? And the way you were describing it, it sounded like your body was saying, oh, you're getting cold, you're getting cold. Okay, now you're getting warm. You're getting really warm here. You're getting really, really warm. That's what you sound like as you were describing
well,
it.
Well, and I've on this show, I've talked about the hot and cold game because I do believe that is a perfect metaphor for how our inner being speaks to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was the sense that I was getting. So what we're really trying to do here when we're trying to make sense of this world and try to figure out how to maneuver in it and how to have that happy life that Abraham says we're here to experience and to have that successful life and have all the good things going on, as we're trying to learn all that, what we're really trying to learn how to do is to play the hot and cold game. That's really it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shoot, I learned that when I was a kid. What took me so long?
Well, and if you think about hot and cold, like when you played the hot and cold game when you were a kid, at least for me, it was usually a bunch of adults sitting around me, you know, giving me clues whether it was hot and cold because they thought it was adorable to watch a kid run around the living room.
Yeah.
But in this more mature game of hot and cold, the signals are using our feelings of negative or positive, and then the intensity of the negative or positive. So like in the hot and cold game, you had hot, you had warm, you had warmer, you had lukewarm, you had cold, you had freezing cold. I mean, at least that's how I played it with my family. So we had variations on the hot and the cold to create intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So the same can be said with this more mature level of the game where we have, I feel a little bad. I feel really bad. I feel really bad. I mean, angry, livid, screaming off the charts bad. Then it can get so bad. You go into like despair, depression, hopelessness, where you're like totally immobile.
Right.
That's like really bad.
Yep.
But on the flip side, you have, well, I feel a little good. I feel kind of content. I feel optimistic. You know, I feel joyful. I feel really happy, excited, exuberant. So it's like there's all sorts of words we use to describe positive feelings. And there's many words we use to describe negative feelings. And so whatever we're feeling in a given moment is how our inner being is letting us know whether we're hot or cold in reference to whatever it is we're thinking about. And
that's a good way to look at it.
When you're a kid, it's really exciting to hear, you know, my Uncle Warren going, Wendy, you're getting warmer. You're getting warmer. Oh, you're getting hot. You're getting really hot. You're almost there. You're really hot. Oh, my God. Like, as a kid, I would go out of my mind. That was so exciting to me. So if we were to look at that as a game in our adult life and get really excited when we started to feel like if we moved from feeling frustrated and angry and kind of a little, you know, agitated to I'm feeling a little bored. Well, now I'm just kind of content. That's actually when you have that awareness and recognition of how your feelings are shifting, that's recognizing you're moving in the direction that you desire to move in. And then when you cross into hopefulness and optimism, it starts to feel really good. And then you go, ooh, it's kind of juicy and exciting. And I'm feeling a sense of, you know, playful curiosity. You know, that's like, ooh, you're getting warmer. You're getting warmer. You're getting really hot. And then when you're in that state of ecstasy, well-being like abounds. Oh, my God, it's so intense. Wow. I mean, I've been at a point where I've been breathless, sitting by myself, just breathless with a sense of well-being that literally is beyond the description of words. And I'm aware in that moment, I'm so aligned to my inner being and I are having a little happy dance. Well, a big happy dance. We're having our own personal party.
Mm-hmm.
But the hot and cold game can absolutely be turned into the adult game that we play in order to recognize what our inner being is really communicating to us.
And it also helps to inform what we're reading in the book. Like if I read the second to last paragraph mm-hmm. of the section we're on, it says, then as you are moving through your day, be sensitive to the way you are feeling. And whenever you find yourself feeling negative emotion, stop whatever it is you are doing that is bringing the emotion forth. For the negative emotion means that in this moment you are negatively creating. Negative emotion exists only when you are miscreating. And so when you recognize that you are feeling negative emotion, no matter why, no matter how it got there, no matter what the situation is, stop doing whatever it is that you are doing and focus your thoughts on something that feels better. In other words, you're cold. Stop going in the cold direction. Go to the warm direction. And if you aren't sure where the warm direction is, try one just to see. If they say, well, you're getting warmer.
I mean, think about it. If you're sitting in a room and you're feeling really cold, you know, if you're sitting on the couch watching TV, chances are you're going to go grab an Afghan and throw it across you because you want to get warmer.
Yeah, you could do something. You're not going to just sit there and freeze.
We do that kind of thing all the time. I mean, I know for me, when I'm sleeping at night, I tend to get really warm. And so I'll throw the covers off and then it'll cool me down. So we have the ability to recognize when we're feeling temperature hot and cold. Now it's time to really tune the barometer to our feelings of hot and cold.
Now, I also want to mention the last paragraph, too, because as I read that, I realize that where I am now is so different from where I was when I was first exploring this stuff because of what it says in this paragraph. Because it says, practice the deliberate creation process for 15 or 20 minutes every day by sitting quietly, undisturbed, and undistracted by that which is around you, daydreaming about your life, seeing yourself as you want to be, and envisioning yourself surrounded by that which pleases you. And I see 15 or 20 minutes a day. 15 or 20 minutes a day? I'm probably practicing it, you know, once every couple of hours for about that long.
Wow.
I mean, I spend so much time now, and yet when I first started, 15 or 20 minutes a day seemed like an eternity. That's how much of a change there's been in my life.
That's a huge change.
It
and
is.
It doesn't surprise me that you've had the incredible shifts that you have had because you're doing this for so much more than 15, 20 minutes a day.
Oh, yeah. It's become really, really big for me. I mean, I've just been determined to learn to be a true master at this in deliberately creating.
Now, I will say that for me, mornings are the best time for me to just allow myself to envision who I want to be and what I want. But it's not easy on days I wake up to an alarm clock because my body's not actually ready to be awake. That's why I use an alarm clock.
Mm-hmm.
But on the weekends, this is why my weekends are so precious to me. On the weekends, I don't wake up to an alarm clock. I wake up whenever my body's ready. But what I tend to do is I do not get out of bed just because I awake. I allow myself to just stay lying in bed, because when you first awake, you are in the best, highest possible vibration of the day, naturally, by default. Because when we sleep, we let go of all resistance. And so when we wake, we're in a state of complete non-resistance. And the only reason we wake up, quote, on the wrong side of the bed is when you immediately start thinking about all the cares of the world that bothered you the day before. But if you don't drag them back into your new day, you start fresh. And so a practice that I've had for a very long time, and I love it, is on the weekends when I notice I'm awake, instead of just jumping out of bed and starting to tackle my to-do list, I let myself just ponder and be deliberate about what do I want to think about right now. Because right now, I am in a really high vibration that has no resistance. So anything I give thought to has a much greater chance of helping to manifest something. That, although I will say that if I start thinking about something, but it's an area where I have a lot of natural resistance, I kind of like screw up that moment.
Oh, okay.
But if I just think on the positive things instead of going, oh, but I've had this and this and this, if I don't let myself go there, and I'm very deliberate about what I choose to think about, I have spent sometimes up to 2 hours laying in bed, just basking in the delight of whatever it is that I'm wanting to create. And I'll tell you, that is how Project X and how Project Body have moved so quickly for me, because I have been using my weekends to just let myself bask in the pleasure of how it's going to unfold and what it will be like when it's here and how good it feels. And truly, in those times that I'm laying in bed, it eventually, not always at first, but eventually I like thought myself into the feelings of it already being done. And the freedom that came with that and does come with that is just over the moon. It's so good. And that's why my weekend times are really precious to me. Just because that's when I have the pleasure of not waking up to an alarm clock. I'm already in a high vibration. I'm already resistant free, and I milk it. So that to me is a wonderful practice that I think almost anybody can at least consider doing. That may not work for everybody, but that's what seemed to work for me.
Very cool. Okay. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. I wanted to send a couple of reminders out there. First, we haven't done this very much lately, so I want to get back into the habit. If you're somebody who's listening and you haven't subscribed before, I mean, most of our listeners we know are subscribers, but we're also getting new people all the time. And if you're somebody who's new and you haven't subscribed yet, please do consider subscribing and sharing. Because when you subscribe, first of all, it means all the podcast episodes come right to your smartphone, which makes it really easy to listen to them whenever you're traveling around or doing whatever it is that you're doing throughout your day. And the instructions are right on the homepage. Just go to loatoday.net. It's all right there. And then secondly, do some sharing after you subscribe and tell people you know, hey, I found this good podcast. I'm really enjoying it and thought you might like to know about it too. So just take a moment and subscribe and share, because that's important. And then finally, I think this is probably going to be one of the last times I'll mention this, because I think people are starting to get the message now. But if you aren't aware that the Sunday podcast has changed, I want to let you know it has changed. It's now an 8 p.m. Eastern Time podcast. We're no longer doing the morning podcast. We're now doing it in the evening, mainly so Louise and I can have a chance to get out and do some things on the weekend, but also because it's a good time for people to call in. So, you know, take advantage and talk to us on Sunday night, because David and I would love to hear from you. And Wendy, this has been a good one. We, as usual, spent time on one subsession, but that's par for our course. That's okay. We'll just do it again tomorrow.
Yep, let's do it again tomorrow. I like doing this kind of thing.
It is. It's fun, and I look forward to doing it as well. And we hope that you'll join us as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.